Text B. Dear Doctor, I am 47 years old, male, and of average height and weight. My health, generally, seems quite good, except for one problem. I wake up every morning feeling tired, so tired that I can hardly get out of bed. All day at work I fight this tired feeling, just dragging myself around. When I get home from work, around 5:30, I have a good dinner with my family, and then sit down to read the newspaper. But before I have finished reading the front page, I fall asleep in my chair, and often sleep until 8:30 or 9 p.m. When I wake up from this nap, I feel wonderful. I'm full of energy and ready to do a day's work. But at that hour, there is nothing to do but watch television, which I do until after midnight. Even at midnight, I still do not feel sleepy, but I know I ought to get a good night's rest, so I take a sleeping pill and go to bed. It's often 2 o'clock in the morning before the pill puts me to sleep. Just a few hours after that, I have to drag myself out of bed again to go to work. All day I feel too tired to work. I just drag myself around until it's time to go home. Do you think there might be something wrong with my blood? JTL. When this letter appeared in the Dear Doctor column of a newspaper, the doctor's reply was printed below it. Here is what the doctor answered. Dear Mr. L, I don't think there is anything wrong with your blood. The key to your problem is that long nap after dinner. If you didn't sleep for hours during the early part of the evening, you would be more ready to sleep at bedtime. If you didn't nap after dinner, you would not want to stay up so late, and you would not feel the need to take a sleeping pill. The pill is still working in your system when you get up in the morning. This helps account for the fact that you feel tired all day. You should get out of the habit of sleeping during the evening. Right after your evening meal, engage in some sort of physical activity, a sport such as bowling, perhaps, or get together with friends for an evening of cards and conversation. Then, go to bed at your usual time, or a little earlier, and you should be able to get a good night's rest without taking a pill. If you can get into the habit of spending your evenings this way, I am sure you will feel less tired during the day. At first it may be hard for you to go to sleep without taking a pill. If so, get up and watch television or do some jobs around your house until you feel sleepy. If you fall asleep and then wake up a few hours later, get up but do not take a sleeping pill. Read a while or listen to the radio and make yourself a warm drink. Eat a sandwich or a cookie. Then go back to bed. Even if you get only a few hours sleep that night, you will feel better in the morning than you usually feel after taking a pill. The next night, you will be ready to sleep at an earlier hour. The most important thing is to avoid taking that nap right after dinner, and to avoid taking pills. Additional information. Yesterday's drizzle did not dampen Beijingers' enthusiasm in events marking the first National Dental Care Day. People of all ages crowded around medical experts who answered questions about dental care and about toothbrushes and toothpaste. A girl in her 20s approached the consulting desk set by the Oral Medical College of the Beijing University of Medical Sciences at the Shidan Crossroad. She wanted to know if there was anything wrong with her teeth. The girl dreamed about losing all her teeth, and, worse yet, her teeth ached when she awoke every morning. After examining her mouth, a consultant said her teeth looked all right. Sometimes, however, tension made people's teeth ache. Relax, she was told, and if that does not help, get a thorough dental examination. Young parents wanted to know how to keep their children's teeth healthy. One by one, the doctors answered their questions and outlined the best solutions for them. More than 500 medical specialists from 18 districts and suburban counties across the municipality, as well as over 200 teachers and students from the Oral Medical College of the Beijing University of Medical Sciences, took part in the sidewalk consultations. And about 47 consulting stations were set up in major streets and the four big department stores at downtown Shidan, Wanfujing, Dongse, and the Dong'an Market. In addition to offering suggestions, the medical workers also brought with them some simple medical equipment for fast dental checks, and toothpaste and toothbrushes for sale. Posters and propaganda blackboards were also set up in most primary and middle schools in Beijing. I never thought there would be so much scientific knowledge on toothbrushing, said a middle-aged man. National Dental Care Day has taught me how important it is to take care of my teeth and how to do it, he said. According to information from the National Dental Diseases Prevention Group, similar activities were conducted yesterday in most of the country's provinces, autonomous regions, and municipalities. A massive campaign to teach people how to care for their own teeth is the best way for China to deal with dental diseases in the face of a shortage of dental medical workers, Chen Minzhang, Minister of Public Health, said on Tuesday at a symposium on dental care in Beijing Stomatological Hospital. At present, almost half of the population is suffering from dental caries, cavities. While the figure is even higher among children, 80% of the urban children have dental caries and 60% are so afflicted in rural areas. In some cities, the rate with children may reach as high as more than 90%. The minister also pointed out that dental care should be taught in primary and middle schools and the vast rural areas in order to raise the whole nation's dental care standards. Lesson 14. What sports do they enjoy? Text A. Not all people like to work, but everyone likes to play. All over the world, men and women and boys and girls enjoy sports. Since the days of long ago, adults and children have called their friends together to spend hours, even days, playing games. Sports help people to live happily. They help to keep people healthy and feeling good. When they are playing games, people move a lot. This is good for their health. Having fun with their friends makes them happy. Many people enjoy sports by watching others play. In small towns, crowds meet to watch the bicycle races or the soccer game. In the big cities, thousands buy tickets to see an ice skating show or a baseball game. What games have you played? What are your favorite sports now? You probably play the games that people in your town or city play. Is the climate hot where you live? Then swimming is probably one of your sports. Boys and girls in Australia love to swim. There are wonderful beaches there, and the weather is good for swimming. Or do you live in a cold climate? Then you would like to ski. There are many skiers in Austria where there are big mountains and cold winters. Does it rain often where you live? Then kite flying would not be one of your sports. It is one of the favorite sports in Thailand. Surfing is an important sport in Hawaii. The Pacific Ocean sends huge waves up on the beaches, waves that are just right for surfing. But you need to live near an ocean to ride the waves and enjoy surfing. People in Switzerland love to climb the wonderful mountains of their country. Mountain climbing and hiking are favorite sports there. But there can be no mountain climbing where there are no mountains. Sports change with the season. People often do not play the same games in winter as in summer. Sailing is fun in warm weather, but when it gets cold, it's time to change to other sports. People talk about sports seasons. Baseball is only played for a few months of the year. This is called the baseball season. Text B. Have you ever wondered how some people can break bricks with their bare hands? People who can do this kind of thing are experts in karate. They're called karatekas. Let's try to find out how karatekas could do such things. We wanted to learn if they were especially strong, and we got some surprising answers. Believe it or not, karatekas aren't stronger than ordinary people. They just have more courage. A karate expert strikes hard objects, like bricks or plates, with a small bone in his wrist, opposite the thumb. Speed is the essence of this sport, but the strange thing is that untrained men can break hard objects in the same way just as well as karatekas. Of course, karatekas practice a lot, and they have a layer of hard skin round their wrists. Though they have this advantage over ordinary people, it's basically just a question of willpower. At least, that's what you can tell your mother after you've experimented on a few dinner plates. Additional information. The football match.
This is John Roberts reporting from Cardiff. The result of the match, which finished at 4 this afternoon between France and Wales, was a draw. Neither side scored. The Dutch referee did not allow the one goal which France managed to kick. The reason for this was that a French player was unfortunately offside. So both teams went home disappointed. This means that neither the French nor the Welsh team will reach first place in this international competition. However, I can say that the spectators were delighted with the game. They particularly admired the French forwards, who were always fast and often threatened the Welsh defence. Once it looked as though the Welsh goalkeeper was in serious trouble. He dived to his right to save a shot from the French centre-forward and crashed his head against the goalpost. A doctor examined him, but he soon began to play again. Of course, the large, friendly crowd applauded him. Wales will certainly welcome another visit from this splendid team.
Lesson 15. Remembering My Grandparents. Text A. When memory began for me, my grandfather was past 60, a great tall man with thick hair becoming grey. He had black eyes and a straight nose which ended in a slightly flattened tip. Once he explained seriously to me that he got that flattened tip as a small child when he fell down and stepped on his nose. The little marks of laughter at the corners of his eyes were the product of a kindly and humorous nature. The years of work which had bent his shoulders had never dulled his humour, nor his love of a joke. Everywhere he went, Gramp made friends easily. At the end of half an hour you felt you had known him all your life. I soon learned that he hated to give orders, but that when he had to, he tried to make his orders sound like suggestions. One July morning, as he was leaving to go to the cornfield, he said, "Edwin, you can pick up the potatoes in the field today, if you want to do that." Then he drove away with his horses. The day passed, and I did not have any desire to pick up potatoes. Evening came, and the potatoes were still in the field. Gramp, dusty and tired, led the horses to get their drink. "How many bags of potatoes were there?" Gramp inquired. "I don't know." "How many potatoes did you pick up?" "I didn't pick any." "Not any? Why not?" "You said I could pick them up if I wanted to. You didn't say I had to." In the next few minutes I learned a lesson I would not forget. When Gramp said I could if I wanted to, he meant that I should want to. Gram hated cruelty and injustice. The injustices of history, even those of 1,000 years before, angered her as much as the injustices of her own day. She also had a deep love of beauty. When she was almost 75 and had gone to live with one of her daughters, she spent a delightful morning washing dishes because, as she said, the beautiful patterns on the dishes gave her pleasure. The bird, the flowers, the clouds, all that was beautiful around her pleased her. She was like the father of the French painter, Millet, who used to gather grass and show it to his son, saying, "See how beautiful this is." In a pioneer society, it is the harder qualities of mind and character that are of value. The softer virtues are considered unnecessary. Men and women struggling daily to earn a living are unable, even for a moment, to forget the business of preserving their lives. Only unusual people, like my grandparents, manage to keep the softer qualities in a world of daily struggle. Such were the two people with whom I spent the months from June to September in the wonderful days of summer and youth. Text B. He always rose early to enjoy at least 2 hours of solitude in the house and garden before the rest of the family came down. In winter, he spent most of the time reading and writing. In summer, he liked to get out of doors to work in the kitchen garden, or to take the dog for a walk in the neighbouring woods and fields. Whatever the weather, there was plenty to occupy him. Although he was a creature of habit, there seemed to be an infinite variety in his pursuits. He wrote book reviews regularly for two of the national weeklies. He worked conscientiously on his special subject, Indian history, and was thus one of the world authorities on it. He collected modern abstract paintings, and so had a circle of friends amongst artists and sculptors. There was hardly anything he did not know about traditional jazz, and he often entertained both British and American jazz musicians. He was a superb cook, and knew a lot about French and German food. His family adored him, and, in a sense, he was spoiled by them. At first glance, you would have taken him for a retired army officer. His bearing was erect, his hair was cut short, he was fussy about his clothes, which were always neat, clean, and conventional. He liked to keep fit, and this was reflected in his clear, steady blue eyes and healthy, suntanned complexion. He hardly ever watched TV, but enjoyed a good film and an occasional evening at the theatre. Additional information. The elderly, who find great rewards and satisfactions in their later lives, are a small minority in this country, but they do exist. They are the aged elite. What is most striking about these people is their capacity for growth. When Arthur Rubinstein was 80, someone told him that he was playing the piano better than ever. "I think so," he agreed. "Now I take chances I never took before. I used to be so much more careful. No wrong notes. Not too bold ideas. Now I let go and enjoy myself, and to hell with everything except the music." Another reason for the success of the aged elite are the traits they have formed earlier in their lives. A 68-year-old woman, 3 times married and widowed, says, "It's not just what you do when you're past 65. It's what you did all your life that matters. If you've lived a full life, developed your mind, you'll be able to use it past 65. Let the young people put that in their soup and eat it." Along with frankness comes humour. A sense of humour, of course, is not something that suddenly arrives at age 65. It is an aid people use all their lives to cope with tension. "Humour," says Dr. James Byron, noted psychologist, "also leads you to join with other people." The ability to associate with others is another trait of the aged elite. "There are 2 ways to deal with stress," says Byron. "You either reach out or withdraw. The reachers seek out other people to share their problems instead of pulling away." Growing, active, humorous, sharing. These are all qualities that describe the aged elite. Lesson 16. How to improve your study habits. Text A. Maybe you are an average student with an average intellect. You pass most of your subjects. You occasionally get good grades, but they are usually just average. You are more interested in hiking than in history, and in sports than in scholarship. The fact is that you don't study very much. You probably think you will never be a top student. This is not necessarily so, however. Anyone can become a better scholar if he or she wants to. It is true that you may not be enthusiastic about everything that you study, but by using your time properly, you may improve your grades without additional work. Here's how. 1. Plan your time carefully. When you plan a trip, one of the first things you must do is to make a list of things to take. If you don't, you are almost certain to leave something important at home. When you plan your week, you should make a list of things that you have to do. Otherwise, you may forget to leave enough time to complete an important task. After making the list, you should make a schedule of your time. First, fill in committed time, eating, sleeping, dressing, school, meeting, etc. Then decide on a good, regular time for studying. Be sure to set aside enough time to complete the work that you are normally assigned each week. Of course, studying shouldn't occupy all of your free time. Don't forget to set aside enough time for entertainment, hobbies, and maybe just relaxation. A weekly schedule may not solve all your problems, but it will force you to realize what is happening to your time. 2. Find a good place to study. Look around the house for a good study area. Keep this space, which may be a desk or simply a corner of your room, free from everything but study materials. No games, radios, or television. If you can't find such a place at home, find a library where you can study. When you can sit down to work, concentrate on the subject, and don't go to the place you have chosen unless you are ready to study. 3. Scan before you read. This means looking a passage over quickly but thoroughly before you begin to read it more carefully. Scanning a passage lets you preview the material and get a general idea of the content. This will actually allow you to skip less important material when you begin to read. Scanning will help you double your reading speed and improve your comprehension. 4. Make good use of your time in class. Take advantage of class time to listen to everything the teacher says. Sit where you can see and hear well. Really listening in class means less work later. Taking notes will help you remember what the teacher says. When the teacher gets off the subject, stop taking notes. 5. Study regularly. When you get home from class, go over your notes. Review the important points that your teacher mentioned in class. Read any related material in your textbook. If you know what your teacher is going to discuss the next day, scan and read that material too. This will help you understand the next class. If you do these things regularly, the material will become more meaningful and you will remember it longer. 6. Develop a good attitude about tests. The purpose of a test is to show what you have learned about a subject. The world won't end if you don't pass a test, so don't get overly worried. Tests do more than just provide grades. They let you know what you need to study more, and they help make your new knowledge permanent. There are other techniques that might help you with your studying. Only a handful have been mentioned here. You will probably discover many others after you have tried these. Text B. Some kind of planning is essential. For one thing, it reveals whether you really have enough to say on the topic you have chosen while there is still time to change to another topic. It is also important because it stimulates your ideas and helps to fix them in your mind. Without some notes to help you, you may find that you begin writing with several ideas in your head, but you forget some of them as you are writing. When you have chosen your topic and perhaps have a general idea of your theme, make quick, short notes of all the ideas that come into your head. Remember that these should be notes, words or phrases, not sentences, which would slow you down. As you do this, you will find that new ideas will come to you, for one idea leads to another. This should not take more than 10 minutes, for in an examination you have no time to waste. If you have not yet decided on your main theme, you can do so now, and then on the main idea of each paragraph. You may have to rearrange your ideas to decide which paragraphs they will fit into and which ideas will be left out altogether. It is for you to decide how detailed your plan should be. If you are good at writing and have had plenty of practice, probably only a few brief notes will be necessary. But if you are not, then you may require a more detailed plan. But remember that even the best writers need to make some notes if they are going to produce a well-organized piece of writing. You will, of course, be given marks for the arrangement of your ideas. With your plan in front of you, you should be able to write your composition. There should be no need to write a rough version first, then correct it and make a final copy. This is a waste of time. Additional information. There is a lot of misunderstanding about studying. Most students have not been taught the principles behind really effective working. Above is a graph showing the amount a person learns against the number of hours he works in a day. If he doesn't do any work, he learns nothing. Point zero. If he does an hour's work, he learns a certain amount. Point one. If he does 2 hours' work, he learns about twice as much. Point two. If he does more work, he'll learn still more. Point three. Now, if he tried to do 23.5 hours' work in 24, he'll be so exhausted that he'll hardly remember anything. What he learns will be very little. Point four. If he did less work, he'd learn more. Point five. Now, whatever the exact shape of this curve, it must have a crest. Point X is the very maximum anyone can learn in the day, and this represents the optimum, the best, amount of work to do. It is the best possible compromise between adequate time at the books and fatigue. Fatigue is an absolutely real thing. One can't escape it or try to ignore it. If you try to, if you press yourself to work past the optimum, and any fool can prop his eyelids up and do 14 hours a day, you can only get on this downward slope and achieve less than the best, and then get exhausted and lose your power of concentration. The skill in being a student consists in getting one's daily study as near the optimum point as possible. I cannot tell you what the optimum is. It differs with the type of work. It differs from person to person, and even in the same person it varies from week to week. You must try to find your own. Every day you study, bear this principle of the optimum in mind. When you feel yourself getting fatigued, if you find yourself repeatedly reading over the same paragraph and not taking it in, that's a pretty good sign you've reached the crest for the day and should stop. Most ordinary students find their optimum at about 5 hours a day. Yours may be a little more or a little less. But if you get in 5 hours good work a day, you'll be doing well. Now, what are you doing with yourself when you aren't working? Before examinations, some students do nothing at all except sit in a chair and worry. Here is another misunderstanding. People too easily think of the mind as if it worked like the body. It does not. If one wanted to conserve physical energy to cut the maximum amount of firewood, one would lie flat on a bed and rest when one wasn't chopping. But the mind cannot rest. Even in sleep you dream, even if you forget your dreams. The mind is always turning. It gets its relaxation only by variety. That is what makes mental rest. When you finish your optimum hourage, you must stop. You must not then sit around in the chair thinking about the work. That only tires without any learning. You must get out and do something. It doesn't matter what, anything, so long as you are actively doing something else but work.
听力课堂欢迎你，
听力课堂欢迎你，
听啊点儿啊。